You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Everybody, welcome back to Radio Rehab, where every Saturday we try to discuss issues that are affecting our families and community, especially around substance abuse issues and mental health issues. So we try to bring guests from all areas and all corners of our community to share with us their experience and some of the things they've learned along the road that can help make us better in our community, especially at staying clean and sober if that is our problem. So please call in. Nothing's below the belt. My guest today he is okay with whatever we ask. He's open about everything he does, every decision he makes, everything he thinks, every belief he has. He's willing to share openly and candidly, and that's why I admire him. It's Eric Williams, and if you're involved with Youth Resources and the Teen Power Camp, you could see Eric every year hanging out with a few hundred teenagers and all the Evansville, Vandenberg, and Tri-State schools, trying to help kids get strength and protective skills so they don't make bad choices around drugs and alcohol and other peer pressures. But ever since I've seen Eric hang out at Teen Power with the young people, I've just had a crush on him. It used to be Brad Ellsworth, but Brad can't hold a candle to Eric Williams. He is just... he's a man to be admired. He really is, and he has integrity, openness, and he's the best sheriff Vandenberg County could even imagine, and I hope he continues to stay with us in lots of political capacities. So I want to introduce you to our guest today, Eric Williams, who is a fan and has visited Radio Rehab before. He's going to tell us at first a little about himself. He's from Evansville and some of the things that shaped him growing up, and then we'll get into a nice discussion. Thank you, Eric, for coming.
Well, where do I send the check?
Probably Radio Rehab.
Thank you. I'm pretty humble now.
Yeah, probably Ed Landers.
But thank you.
Yeah, I'll take cash, right. And we also have Jane Deal, who is a big friend of Radio Rehab, from a nurse at St. Mary's.
Excellent. I'm glad to be here and, entertain any questions you might have. And, I hope we can just have some healthy conversation about the future of our community and the directions we're going and things that are happening that are exciting.
There are a lot of things happening.
I'm thrilled every day to be in this community. I think there's no place like it, even though we're our own worst critics often. Mm-hmm. We do the best job of beating ourselves down, but we've got a lot to offer, and we've got a big future ahead of us. And one of the reasons I stay so involved in things like Youth Resources is because those are the kids that I'm going to be working for soon enough. And everything I can give them to get them off on the right foot and give them the right start is just going to make my future that much better. So if nothing else, it's a little selfish.
Yeah, yeah.
Evansville's a great place. And like I said, we've got lots of good things coming. I currently have the best job in the county, bar none.
You think? Jail?
Yeah,
law enforcement, really?
Being the sheriff of the county is the most humbling, most I don't know. I can't even begin to describe it. To think that the population selected me to be their protector, to take care of the issues that very few people want to have to deal with and talk about, but they trusted me to do it. I go to work every day excited to be there. There are a few days I've left. I'm a little frustrated,
yeah.
Less than excited. But every day I get up and I'm ready to go to work and excited about it. So I appreciate the community's willingness to let me do this for them,
I hope
they think we're doing an okay job. I'm proud of the team I've assembled. We've got a great team.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that a little bit ahead of time. It's easy to be a good leader when you've got good followers. And in many respects, my followers are leaders in their own right. They each lead in their own perspective areas.
Mm-hmm.
So the sheriff's office is a great place. I often worry about that. I've done the coolest thing I'm ever going to do. So,
well, how did you ever get involved and want to do something like carry guns and protect the community?
Well, I never carried a gun until I got a job with the sheriff's office. I'm okay with guns and everything, but that. Just I didn't grow up in a gun kind of family, but I respect them and understand they're good.
Sure.
They're an important thing and an important topic. But I think if you asked my dad, he'd tell you that he knew I always wanted to be a policeman because I was fascinated with Adam 12 and Chips. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, my dad watched shows
Charlie's
like Barney
Angels.
Miller and, you know, all those kinds of shows. And so I was always watching them. But my family has had a business here in town, and I think my plan was to just go into work for the family. I would have been the, I believe, the sixth generation to work for my family's business here. And so I kind of geared my education towards that. My degree was in business administration. But while I was in college, I had some friends and met some people that were involved in law enforcement. And I was just fascinated, and a lot of that old interest sparked up and began asking lots of questions of them. One of those individuals was an alumni of the fraternity I was in college. And a lot of times he would find himself assigned to the district where our fraternity house was. Mm-hmm. And so he'd stop by the fraternity house and write his reports and get a soft drink out of our soda machine and, you know, and hang out and just visit. And I'd asked him questions nonstop. You know, what's it like? What are you doing? And finally, one day he said, you know, look, you're wearing me out. He said, this is obviously what you want to do. You need to come take our tests. And so in the meantime, I did take the test, but I became a reserve deputy to see if it was something I wanted to do, and I fell in love with it. And the alumni is probably still my best friend to this day, and as I got hired, we kind of followed each other through our careers. He got promoted, and I'd get assigned to him, and then he'd get promoted, and I'd get promoted, but assigned to him. And,
yeah.
And we've been best friends ever since, He's been a great mentor to me and given me lots of good things to think about and created lots of opportunities for me. So, but now he's it's Brad Ellsworth.
Right.
If you haven't figured it out yet.
Yes. Yeah. So one person can really make an influence on a young adult male or female.
Absolutely. I mean, I was very fortunate to be in a fraternity that was very active at the university level and really encouraged involvement, extracurricular activities, student government, and all those kinds of things. And we really pushed all of our membership. So I had that going for me, but had I not built that relationship with Brad, I don't know that I'd ever felt strong enough to take the leap to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that's what I always wanted to do, that I was fascinated with it, but I figured I'd end up working with my family.
Sure.
And, you know, that's just what you did.
Right.
So. But, you know, I'm thankful every day, and you know, I try to do my best and make the people proud of me that have given me opportunities. You know, I oftentimes wonder because I, you know, the sheriff that hired me, I often wonder if, you know, sometimes he thinks, well, I made a good choice in hiring that one because he's done okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I tell the young guys that I'm hiring that, you know, I hope someday that I'm sitting on my porch reading the newspaper and I'm reading about this deputy that I hired who's now the lieutenant or a
mm-hmm.
chief or maybe the sheriff.
Definitely.
And I'll know I chose wisely.
What a gift. Did you know getting into law enforcement that it was going to involve so many psychosocial dilemmas in our families and communities, like drugs and alcohol and mental illness and PTSD? Did you have any clue?
No, I don't think anybody has any clue. When you dream about being a policeman, you know, so many of young kids base what they think policemen do on television. I did. Adam 12.
Sure.
You know, you get in a car, you drive around, you answer radio calls, you solve people's problems for the immediate moment, you drive on, and the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was exciting. You felt like you were making a difference for people. But it's a lot deeper than that, especially as you get promoted through the ranks or you take on aspects of the operation like running the jail and community corrections and all the other things that go with the law enforcement component in our society. No, I had no idea that I was getting in for all this.
Yes. Well, we've learned so much more, too, over the years than probably when all of us got in the business we're in.
Well, in law enforcement, you know, everything we do is changing day to day. As society grows, as society changes its expectations and its wants and needs, as we learn more about how human beings operate, we add technology to that mix, we do all kinds of things. So, you know, the one thing that to stay on top of your game in the law enforcement community is you've got to be ahead of the curve, constantly training, constantly learning new things. And keeping a very open mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be the first to admit when, as I started through my career in law enforcement, I was very law and order. It's either
black
yes or
white.
No, black
yeah.
and white, you know, right or wrong. And getting to work in the jail for as long as I did, And then moving into community corrections, I learned a lot about that. It's not nearly as black and white as you'd like to think. It's not it can't be as rigid as you'd like to make it. And really that the people that created our criminal justice system were far wiser than sometimes I gave them credit for, because we're a system of people. Mm-hmm. That's why we have juries, we have judges, we have case managers, we have human beings as policemen, so that you can make decisions based on totality of circumstances, as opposed to, here's the rule, this is what you did, you're done.
Yeah.
It's not that simple.
Did you ever realize drugs and alcohol were going to be such a powerful force in your job?
Having experience with drugs and alcohol growing up with friends or family and seeing what it did, I knew that it would be a problem. But early in my career, I never realized that it was going to be this mm-hmm. big of a component of our system. You know, when I look at the jail population today, I can fairly comfortably tell people that probably 85% of the people that are in my facility today mm-hmm. are there for some addiction-related reason.
I was just going to ask you, what do you think the percent of incarcerated people have that issue? And, you know, in your training, is education as far as substance abuse emphasized on how to deal with it, because oftentimes it's not a punitive,
mm-hmm.
minus criminal-minded mm-hmm. activities, but, you know, addiction is addiction, and
the
pathology is so different.
Well, and I think that's where we struggle as a community and as a system, is recognizing that, you know, we have mental health issues, and those are, medical conditions more than they are criminal decisions.
But they affect the criminal.
But they are so closely intertwined.
Yeah.
You know, I probably have as many individuals in my facility right now that should be in mental health facilities but
right.
aren't. But because of the system is the way it is, they've committed crimes. Whether they did so with the proper faculties and made those choices like you'd expect anybody on the street to make them, probably not the case, but we don't have anywhere else to go with
it. They've shut down all the mental illness facilities and treatment.
We spend a lot of time training, but, you know, one of the things about ours is, you know, I look at it as I hire individuals. I want to hire really well-rounded, good-minded, common-sense kind of people. We teach them the basics of being a policeman, but so much of what you learn just has to be from experience.
From real-life experience.
You know, seeing what's happening on the street, finding out what works and what actions are making the most difference for people. And what's good for me is not going to be good for you or you.
It's, right.
You know, we each have different environments. We have different sets of things that make us tick,
mm-hmm.
Things that are affecting us personally. Mm-hmm. And we have to find each one of those and mold a solution for each person that's going to make sense.
Well, I know you send your officers to that sensitivity training just to help them understand sometimes when they approach somebody, it escalates their intoxication.
For example, if we talk about mental health, we've gone to great mm-hmm. lengths to get a lot of our people CIT trained,
right.
Which is an opportunity for us at the street level to take a look at a circumstance, interview the person, and give the guy on the street some latitude to make some decisions that might keep somebody that you know normally we'd probably put into jail. And quite honestly, that jail's not going to help them do anything but get worse.
Right.
Them at least and get them off the streets and
progression. If we have them long enough. But
right.
You know, the jail population churns. You know, on any given day right now, obviously it's been in the news a lot. The jail's very crowded.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been over 600. But the average person in our jail is there just short of 24 hours.
Really?
Is the average length of stay in our facility, because we churn people. Now, if you take the people that are there 72 hours or less, the average length of stay is probably 60 days, somewhere in that range. But, you know, in a facility, and if you do the math, in a facility like Vandenberg County's, we're going to book probably 11,000 people in there this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so they churn through there. So 24 hours is not enough time to detox anybody.
Or
24
do an
hours
intervention,
is not,
right.
to do anything.
No.
But, you know, it's a place to hold them until the system kicks in, takes a look at it, and decides, well, you're going to post bond, or we can let you go on your own recognizance, or we can do something else with you. But my facility also doesn't have the capability to do much with you while you're there if you're there for a long period of time. We're doing some good things. You know, we've got programming in there. Mm-hmm. We've got celebrating recovery through the Good News Jail and Prison Ministries. We've got a lot of programs in there, but what level of impact they're making, you know, we can't measure it just mm-hmm. yet. We're working on some measurements.
Well, you have the Safe House, too.
Yeah, we have. Well,
that's
we don't call it the Safe House anymore. It's the Community Corrections
Community
Complex.
Community Corrections Complex.
It is the Safe House.
Yeah.
And that is under the sheriff's jurisdiction now.
Now, that could be a treatment facility. They have case management there.
They bring meetings there, don't they?
Yes, we've got lots of treatment in mm-hmm. that facility. We've got a case manager assigned to everybody that is in the facility. And their job is to make sure that they're progressing through the system, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. they're making positive steps
treatment.
Forward. That when we do experience relapse, it's not so significant to start them over again, or that, you know, we apply the proper sanctions to get them moving through the system, looking for the right programming, because everybody's different. Not mm-hmm. everybody in community corrections needs anger management or
right.
AA or NA. Everybody's there for a different reason. So, you know, the case manager's job is to take a look at those people and say, this is the programming course, and then report that back to the courts, their progress, so that we can work them through the system, and ultimately is to have them be productive citizens again.
It's a lot like drug court, isn't it?
In some respects. It's a little different variation. Drug court is very specific in the
target population.
In the target population,
right.
The people that they're dealing with.
But the monitoring is daily.
It varies from person to person. Some people, as they progress through the system, don't get monitored daily. Some mm-hmm. are monitored. You know, we have the work release component of it, where if you're not at work or in class or looking for a job, you're living with us.
Right.
We have electronic home detention, where, you know, we're monitoring you through GPS and electronic. You come in and check with
wow.
us. You know, we have the day reporting, where you come in and check. We do verification. You know, there's
lots of highways.
Different. Yeah, everybody's different. You know what. What's good for one is not necessarily good
That's
for
right.
the other, and trying to pigeonhole people sometimes become problematic.
Who decides that, Eric? The case manager, or is there a clinical assessment like drug court, or is it more
we don't have the funding that we would like to have to put in place some of the expertise that we would like
mm-hmm.
to have, but I think we do a really good job of what we have. I think we
yeah.
have, percentage-wise, lots of successes compared to other similarly situated organizations.
Sure.
But basically, it's usually the judges, probation, case manager that decides the course that we're going to follow.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I know there's a village looking at people that come in there. It's not just a judge or a sheriff or a case. There's a real team approach, I think.
Yeah, it's not the perfect solution, but I don't know that anybody's found the perfect solution yet, because I think if they did, we'd all be using it.
I know.
But we're working on, based on the means that we have. You know, times are tight, funding is short, and, you know, quite honestly, you know, the last thing anybody wants to spend money on is jails, prisons, and criminals. That's the last group people want to spend money on.
I know,
but
they are.
The reality of it is that the people that go through our system, you know, 90-some-odd percent of them are going to be back on the street someday. So, you know, if they're a captive audience and you have an opportunity to make a difference for them so that they're a better citizen
mm-hmm.
when they're out
mm-hmm.
or they're not under our watch, yeah, it seems to me it's kind of pointless not to at least try.
Right. Well, don't go away, Radio Rehab. We have to take a break. We have a great discussion going with Eric Williams, the sheriff of Vandenberg County. Please call with your questions or text if you want to. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. We're having a candid and good discussion with Eric Williams, the sheriff of Vandenberg County, just about the things that have shaped him, the things he's learning, and how he's role modeling, trying to individualize the best way you can how to help people get better on short-term basis. Eric, I have to ask you. I thought I have you captive audience. I got to ask you. What do you think about the whole marijuana issue? Do you think it is a drug that impairs your brain like alcohol and other drugs? Where do you feel philosophically about marijuana?
You know, As far as I'm concerned, marijuana is a drug just like all the other drugs mm-hmm. that are out there. There are a lot of things that are legal drugs currently that affect your, you know, affect who you are and how you behave and the things you do. The coffee you drink, the Diet Mountain Dew that I might drink, you know, the caffeine in there, they affect who you are a little bit. But the discussion really goes towards, do we legalize marijuana? And from my perspective, you know, there's still enough law and order in me maybe to say that that sounds like giving up.
Yeah.
That, you know, as I see the young people that, you know, they may try the marijuana and that becomes, you know, well, we've talked about it for years, the gateway, that, well, that didn't kill me, so I'm going to try the next one. And I sure had fun doing that. And, you know, and so it seems to me that it's given up to legalize it and to say, okay, we quit. Go ahead and knock yourself out. I do think it's human nature, though, to constantly try to medicate yourself or to find
feel good.
Things to feel better.
Yeah.
I just think that's in who we are as human beings. But there are certain things that we've determined that when you do that, you put a significant portion of the rest of the population at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think we try to legislate and create laws about so that, you know, while you know, I might not necessarily care what you're doing to yourself, even though you're going to cost us down in the long run, it's what you're going to do to the rest of the community and the rest of the society and when you're going to be operating that motor vehicle under the influence and you're going to be doing those kinds of things that put somebody else that chose differently at extreme risk. But, you know, I'm not prepared to give up yet.
It's such a divisive issue, the marijuana.
It certainly is. And, you know, when I ran for sheriff, one of the things that I told people is that, you know, I, as the sheriff, probably am not going to create any new programs. I'm not going to create mm-hmm. new groups and organizations to try to combat problems we see. Now, I would if I thought there was a necessity. But what I've really tried to do is take the power of the office of sheriff and the capabilities of my staff and manpower and lend them to the other people in our community that are already doing great things. That's why you see a lot of my people involved in programs like youth resources.
Yeah, and drug court.
You know,
don't you have
court.
A deputy that does the home verifications
yes.
for drug court?
Looking for opportunities for us to assist others as opposed to competing, creating programs
right.
that are always doing good things. But for me, you know, the other part of my campaign was that it's got to be about education. That we have to provide opportunities for our kids, that, you know, there may be some people in our community that we quite honestly just have to give up on,
mm-hmm.
that they are so far along mm-hmm. in the system that the change in their behavior patterns, change in the way they make choices may be unrealistic. And when I look at the number of dollars that we put towards those people at that end of the spectrum, as opposed to taking those dollars and put them towards the kids that haven't made the choices
yeah.
yet, that we're teaching them how to make good choices, that the dollars in the long run are better spent there.
Definitely.
Providing opportunities for our kids, giving them the tools and the knowledge and the resources so that they're making good
mm-hmm.
choices and they know what the choices they're making are going to do to them down the road. And I think that, you know, you see programs like Teen Power and
mm-hmm.
The Teen Advisory Council and some of those things,
mm-hmm.
and you see it working.
Yes.
You know, I don't need empirical data. I can sit
That's
there and look
right.
at it and see that it's working.
And even Youth First has social workers in all the schools now.
Youth First is another
substance.
One of those groups and
Absolutely.
Programs in our community that we ought to be very thankful
Absolutely.
And proud of. They do
yeah.
wonderful work in our community. They've got counselors in many of our schools. You know,
yes.
they are hands-on day-to-day in the schools.
Yep.
You know, I don't know that
they really are good youth representatives.
Those are good uses of our dollars.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to Dr. Wooten this morning, and I asked him, I told him you were coming on, and we talked about the marijuana issue, and he's a physician, so of course he's saying if we legalize it, it's still going to cost us a lot medically, just like alcohol and nicotine have, which are 50 times more abused than any other drug in America, and the health care costs for nicotine and alcohol are out the door. So he said marijuana on the other end would end up costing us as well, maybe not in your law enforcement or the judge's time, but the health related.
I think it was still just like the, you know, you look at the illegal activities that occur around legal tobacco and the illegal activities that occur around legalized alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you add marijuana to that list, you're just mm-hmm. you're gonna add that. You know, we know what it is right now. We know what the issues are. You know, I still believe ultimately that the long-range solution is we need to eliminate the demand.
Yeah, yeah, which would be with our youth. What's the need here,
yeah,
really?
Social issues.
And you have talked about, you know, being a nurse and in the healthcare world, how many doctors confront substance abuse when they're looking at heart disease or liver disease or gastritis or blood pressure. We still don't know how in any system to talk about substance abuse. Maybe drug courts and the jails are the best.
It's education. You know, I just think that in general, you know, the health community, our teachers, our corrections, everyone, you know, just educating them that, you know, the problems, I think, are personally, I think, are born out of societal issues.
Yes.
You know, is it home? And, you know, they'll say, oh, it's a dysfunctional home. Well, sometimes our society is dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
We sometimes don't know how to address things that are right in front of our face, but I think what you guys are talking about, education, prevention.
Well, I struggle with, you use the word dysfunctional, and what's dysfunctional to you may not be dysfunctional to me.
That's right.
You know, as we describe the terminology, and I think we confuse ourselves talking about, you know, because maybe my childhood didn't look like the textbook perfect childhood. You know, I came from a divorced family, but I certainly wouldn't have described it as dysfunctional. You know,
That's right.
I've known families and kids that grew up in what some would describe as dysfunctional, but they functioned and they got things done and did the right things. So, you know, again, it's back to people.
Yeah, they're not even using that word anymore to describe a family so much, but it can definitely connote an image of a family that's been in trouble. But just because you're divorced doesn't mean your family's in trouble.
No. It can, but it doesn't.
Right.
It's not, it's, they're not one,
no.
It's two.
No. So what else does the sheriff do? Maybe clarify for, is it just the jail mainly, which is enough, but, and that's layers of stuff, but.
No, we're, the sheriff's office is a full service law enforcement agency. We've, you know, I've got patrol division, detective division, we've got people assigned to narcotics. We provide the security in the courts. We do all the process of service. We house the jails and prisoners, transport the prisoners, secure the courts. There's a lot of different facets of the sheriff's office, and which is one of the things that makes it as an exciting agency is there's so many different components of the same organization that there's a lot of variety going on and a lot of things to do.
So what's the, because I don't, forgive my ignorance, but what's the big deal right now about the sheriff's department and the police department? They're so different, but why are people trying to make them the same?
Well, see, and that's where I would probably differ a little bit. I don't think we're all that much different.
You don't?
I think the Evansville Police Department, we're very fortunate in this community to have the kind of police department we have. Lots of great individuals, a good operation.
But it's a different system, isn't it? It's a city.
But it's a city police department, and they basically the fundamental difference to me is how they get their leadership. And that's been the argument between myself and the police department with the consolidation issue. You know, my vision I had as we talk about local government consolidation for law enforcement is that probably law enforcement is our biggest opportunity to save dollars, to do things more efficiently and effectively, because we have two professional law enforcement agencies operating in this community side by side. There's not a lot of duplication, but there is. There are opportunities, though, through the upper echelon to reduce our staffs and save dollars. Maybe not spend less. I've never promised that we were going to save any money, but we would be able to do cost control. That as consolidation worked and our community grew, the needs for law enforcement would grow, but we might be able to sustain that without growing for a period of time.
So we'd still have police officers in this.
Well, the sheriff's office has law enforcement officers. My vision was that you take the best of both worlds. They've got some things they do very well. We've got some things we do very well. Why not take both of those and take best practices, put the people at the table, and develop an organization that makes sense, that meets the needs of the community effective and efficiently, and put them together. And the fundamental piece of it was, how do you get your leadership? I happen to be a big believer in that the elected office of sheriff is the one that should lead law enforcement, that it's such an important topic and that the community deserves the right to elect that person and be held accountable directly by the people. That's what I'm held accountable by you all.
Right.
As opposed to being an appointment of the mayor. There are pros and cons. I'm not saying that either one's the perfect world, but I think given the choice, what we wanted to see, what I wanted to see, and the vision I've put forth was, put law enforcement under the office of sheriff. Mm. For those in our community that wanted to see the mayor not be a strong mayor, which I'm not sure I understand why you don't want your mayor to be strong, but I think what I want him to be strong at is being a leader, a visionary, looking at infrastructure, looking at economic development, mm-hmm. job creation.
And I like that you said best practices. Yeah. There's research now that tells us what works.
Yeah, it's not that difficult to figure out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
But you have a strong mayor doing that. And for the people that wanted to limit his authority some, one of the best limits is to take away the Army. Put the people that are enforcing the laws under another elected office holder. And I struggle with the concept that during consolidation we've not talked about appointing prosecutors, judges, auditors, treasurers.
Could that happen?
Well, someday? The Constitution says no. The
right.
Indiana Constitution says that's not how it's going to work as far as auditors and treasurers. The judges are separate. If we think it's so important that we are going to continue to elect the coroner, continue to elect our judges, mm-hmm. continue to elect our prosecutor, why on earth would we think it's not important enough to elect the person that's in charge of the people that provide safety and security in our homes, businesses, day and night, the person that has the authority mm-hmm. to take away your freedoms and to lock you up, and the person that runs the jail? When you are held against your will, pending a date in court, why would you want that to be an appointment and not somebody that's answerable directly to the public? I feel very strongly about that.
That makes sense, hearing you put it out there like that, Eric. I don't know if people see that or can understand that at the street level, at the voters level.
Well, I think they do.
You do?
I think we sometimes don't give the public enough credit.
Well, but I think people don't understand, unless they've had to deal with law enforcement, even all the different layers involved.
And that could possibly be. I mean, there are lots of members of our community that don't want to know how local government works until they have to need something.
Right. Or how law enforcement. They've never been in a courtroom.
I mean, for most people, they'd just soon never deal with me.
Yes.
Generally I don't show up, you know, the FTD guy shows up bringing flowers, the UPS guy shows up bringing packages and things that you've been looking for. When the sheriff shows up, it's generally not good news.
No.
They're used to seeing law enforcement and with a car pulled up behind them on the street, and you're probably getting ready to get a ticket.
Yeah.
Or the circumstances, we may not be there because of something horrible or you've done something wrong, but the circumstances that brought us there are not very pleasant. You know,
right.
You've been involved in a traffic crash and it wasn't your fault, but it's already a bad day, and mm-hmm. the people you're having to talk to is somebody like me.
Yeah.
So
now you have tasers.
Yeah, we've got tasers now.
And he got tasered yesterday.
I did.
He said it is
the most painful thing I've ever experienced in my entire life.
And he's experienced a lot.
The
taser hurts.
Yeah, I sent myself through the training, probably more out of curiosity than anything else, because we've been issuing them for several years now. They're a wonderful law enforcement tool when used properly. But you see all the videos on TV of people being tased. And
you're
thinking,
the YouTube.
How could it be that? And it's no kidding around.
Like you were shot.
No, it's a pain you can't describe and a feeling you can't describe. And I was clenched up waiting for it. And when it hit, it was the longest 5 seconds of my life.
Woo!
But when it was over. So, but it's a great law enforcement.
So now you know the pain. I think that's great that you did it.
Well, it's
now
it's,
you know what that feels like to people.
Some agencies don't require their personnel to actually experience it before they're allowed to carry it. I happen to believe that in a tool like that, that to help you articulate to a court and to a jury why you used the mm-hmm. force you used, it helps to know what it does and how it works and why you did that. I think it adds a lot of credibility to your reports and your decision to do it.
Right.
And I think you're less likely just to use it as a tool when you know what it does.
Well, if somebody's drunk or high, don't expect it to stop them. They probably won't feel it. No, they
feel it. The way that the device works, though, those don't matter so much. They may not recognize the pain, but it does lock your nervous system up.
Really?
You're not going to fight through that.
Oof. Another tool.
It's another tool in the law enforcement tool belt.
Let me ask you something, and maybe this is a sensitive subject, but since at Radio Rehab we really are concerned and talk about the minority mm-hmm. issues in the community, do you think, as the sheriff, that there is still a disparity in the way we treat African Americans that might have the same legal problems as a Caucasian person?
Yeah, I think if you said that there wasn't some disparity, you'd be living in a bucket somewhere, or you weren't paying attention. I through the time I've been with the sheriff's office, it's gotten better, and it continues to improve itself. But I think that we find that's probably in any of the minority populations that there's some differences in the way we treat them. I mean, I fundamentally believe that there are biases at the human level that you can't overcome. It's how you deal with them and how you address those that makes the difference. You know, I'm proud of who I am, just like I expect that you all are proud of who you are. And that in and of itself creates a bias. But you know, for the African-American community, you know, it is a little more apparent sometimes. Mm-hmm. I would guess that the population of Vandenberg County is somewhere shy of 10% African-American. But if my population in the jail averages 40 to 50% African-American, there's something to be looked at. You know, what
that
caused us to get there?
That's pretty obvious.
Why does that exist that way? What is the issue? That's for a lot of very smart people to do the research and figure out. You know, you can assume, is it because
are people looking at that?
I think everybody's constantly monitoring.
Is it the African American community looking at it as well, sitting at the tables to look at it?
I think that they are. I think they're very well aware of it. And I shouldn't use the word they, but I think the organizations that represent the African American community are very in touch with what's happening. There's some significantly intelligent, strong leadership in a lot of those organizations that are very active in our community.
And very concerned.
And very concerned and looking into those issues. But when you look at, you can ask yourself, why is it? And I don't know that there is one single good answer. I could say the same thing, though, if I look at the jail population. The most significant rising jail population I have is females.
Yeah.
You know, but females, I think...
And young adults, too, isn't it? The 18 to 25-year-olds?
Yeah, I think the average age in the jail is probably around 24, 25 right
really?
Now.
Really?
But when you look at the female population, when I started at the sheriff's office, there would be nights when, you know, in the whole jail, we'd have three or four women.
Yeah.
Now it's I'm averaging 70 to 80 women out of my population, and it's escalating at a very rapid rate. And so, you know, in the same sense, you know, why is that?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that changing?
Mm-hmm.
Is it equal rights? You know, finally it's just coming around and we're getting there. Are females becoming more involved in criminal activity? Is the system less forgiving of females now?
Yeah, we're not as enabled as we once were, probably.
There's a lot of reasons, and I think it's not one single answer, but there's a whole host of those that are combining to create this situation where we're seeing the female population skyrocket.
Yes. Wow. Very compelling discussion. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We have to take a break for our sponsors. We'll be right back with Sheriff Eric Williams. We're back with Eric Williams, our sheriff, talking about a lot of things, about law enforcement, about people, families, minorities, and substance abuse, mental health issues. So, Eric, I asked at break if he had a wish list. I mean, it's awesome. We have a drug court program now that has lots of layers. We have the community corrections, but where substance abuse and co-occurring disorders are concerned, Eric, if you had a wish list of where we could be, either right now or in a couple of years, what would you like to see? Where would you like to see us be? And how do you think we could get there?
I think the idealistic wish would be for us to be a drug-free community.
Yeah.
And to see that not be an issue for us, and that we could focus our resources somewhere else on educational opportunities, economic development and growth, bringing businesses here, you know, doing fun things. But that's probably not a realistic aspiration. So in the meantime, you know, to see that the people of our community have empathy.
Mm.
You know, and I don't know how else to say that. Is, you know, when I hire people for the sheriff's office, I often tell them that, you know, I'm not asking you to be sympathetic to people, you know, to feel sorry for anybody, because people make choices. You know, people need to be held accountable for their choices. But please be a little empathetic and try to understand why they made the choices they made as you make the decisions you make on how you're going to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have never committed a crime but faced with certain situations and certain things going on. That may be a choice they look at. Doesn't mean make it right. Doesn't mean they shouldn't be held accountable. But you can begin to understand why some things happen the way they do and people do some of the things they do.
More empathy, that's good.
I would hope for continuing to see the community-based groups that we have working for making a better community, working to help one another. The youth resources, the Youth Firsts, you know, another group I'm involved in. It's sad that we have to have it, but the Albion Fellows Bacon Center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hate the fact that we even have to have an organization like that, but we're so fortunate that we have an organization like that that does it so well.
Yes.
But, you know, to see them out of business because they have no demand anymore would be great.
Mm.
You know, Sheriff Ellsworth used to compare himself to the Maytag repairman. I get it, you know, to work yourself out of a job, to build a product that works so well and that functions so well that you don't need law enforcement in the same way we do today. You know, what a great thing to strive for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, is it realistic? No, but I think it's a good perspective to have on things and to put out there and say, that's something we're working towards.
Do you think decriminalizing the whole drug addiction, even with the opiates now, I'm sure you're seeing more controlled substances and the marijuana, do you think decriminalizing and putting more money in treatment or putting more drug courts, more treatment programs in the jails, do you think that would be a better bang for the buck?
You know, the drug court, for example, which I'm a big proponent of.
Right.
I think it works. You know, some of the things that make it work so well is that they've got some resources, they've got good people involved in it, and their ability to go and select the people that are going to participate. You know, they're able to go through and look and
That's
find
true.
The people that have a high probability
some
of success.
Motivation, yeah.
Which there's nothing wrong with that. That's what you ought to do. You ought to be selective on who you put in which programs
mm-hmm.
based on their potential to succeed.
Yeah.
That just makes good sense to me. But all those work because they were in the criminal justice system and you have that leverage to put on people to make things work.
Oh, and that helps.
So I'm not sure decriminalizing them is going to really solve the issue. I'm not sure that we don't need to spend more time with treatment opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I go back to, you know, certain people have gotten to a certain point in their life where that's where they're at. And unless they're willing to come help or take my help or take mm-hmm. your help and accept it, you know, I can throw money at them all
That's
day
right.
long and it's not going to help. But when I'm dealing with my youth that haven't made the bad choices yet, but are being faced now daily with the opportunity to make those choices, mm-hmm. to me that's where those dollars ought to be going.
Yeah.
Let's
get
you know,
there.
Spend a dime today to save the dollar tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes I think we don't have much foresight when it comes to that. I know that,
yeah.
you know, our state is faced with possibly building a new prison in the near future, you know, because the prison population is so high. Our jail here locally is crowded at its seams. Now, you have to ask yourself, and the thing that I keep telling people about jail crowding is I've not even begun to advocate adding on to our jail.
Right.
Yet. That's a solution that's out there that you have to know is out there and is a consideration. But we need to make sure that the right people are in jail for the right reasons, for the right amounts of time, and that the rest of the system is operating as efficiently as it can. Then if all those things are in place or is the best of our ability with what we have in our community and we still have too many, then maybe we need to talk about adding on. But, you know, I'm not convinced that if we decriminalize marijuana, that would have a significant impact on the population in the jail.
I agree.
Nor would it have a significant impact on the people that are using marijuana. In fact,
mm-hmm.
you know, some might say that if you decriminalize marijuana, it becomes easier to get. There's less stigma to that. They've tried this one. Mm. Now I am going to go on and move to the next one, which is illegal.
Yeah, I mean, look what happened in legalizing alcohol.
This is probably a conversation for people that are far smarter than I am.
Me too. But there is a saying in Alcoholics Anonymous that some are just constitutionally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. And I think, as you said, there are some people that are criminals, and they're not going to change.
Yeah. And for us to continue to spend huge resources on those people once we've figured out who they are, I don't know that it's effective use of the money. But
I agree. That's why you can't come through drug court twice.
See, they've got that ability to be selective.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's all part of the criminal justice
system.
Don't
you?
Not to the same degree.
In community corrections? Or
not
no,
to the same degree.
That's right. A judge can just sentence them
there.
Not
to the same degree. But, you know, we're very fortunate. Again, I don't want to – I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus today. We're very fortunate in our community. We've got a very, very good bench that are very in tune with our needs and the things that are happening and are very open and willing to
meet
with us.
And they're not enablers. They'll screen out the criminals from the
– No. So we're very fortunate that we have a bench the way we do that is open and willing to try new things. I mean, for example, our court system here that allowed Judge Trockman to move forward with the drug court.
Yeah.
And doing some other things.
And continue to support that growth.
And they, I've seen nothing but support for those programs.
And you've been as well supportive of that.
So it's we're fortunate.
Yes. We are in Vandenberg County. Warrick County's slow getting there, but we're getting there slow, but sure. We have a drug court there now and a prosecutor. You know, we got Dan Miller from you guys. So
yeah, Dan did a lot of – he did drug prosecutions in Vandenberg County for years and years and years. And it was an asset to our community in that respect, and I'm sure he'll do very well in Warrick County.
Yeah, he's been good for us there on our drug court program. Anything in closing that you think we could say to the Radio Rehab audience that is important for us to think about and try to do something about?
You know, we talked a lot today about things that are going on in our community and the opportunities that are out there. You know, I just continue to stress to try to make, you know, everybody in this community, if they can make a difference in somebody else's life, you know, do something to put somebody on the right track, reach out to somebody. You know, for the youth that are out there, we tell them all the time, you know, that you're the strength. You know, you're youth resources, again, it's peer-based. It's kids working with other kids, helping the kids that may be flying a little bit crooked to straighten them back up and get them on the right track. And they're much more likely to listen to their peers than they are me, old guy in a sheriff's uniform.
Yeah.
So, making a difference for other people, if everybody in Evansville, Vandenberg County just spent a little more time trying to make a difference for somebody else. Just think where we'd be. And we're already in good shape.
We need to get Eric to an AA meeting. Because what you have said throughout this show that's important to you are things like empathy, passing it on, taking time to
help another person.
Yeah.
Get out of yourself.
We need to get him to an honorary Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Definitely. Because that's the whole principle of that is helping, and it doesn't cost a penny.
Right.
You just show up to help and share.
Well,
it sounds like you're saying that's what we need to do.
We're about people.
Yeah.
You know, I chose a career that was entirely about people.
That's true.
And about making a difference and trying to help people when they're having their worst episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, to me, how we're going to make a difference is just by one at a time.
Yep.
You know, making a difference for somebody. And again, if everybody made a difference for one other person, everybody would be affected.
Off. Isn't that the truth?
And I think we do. I mean, we do a great job in this community. We've got wonderful people doing wonderful things, and I'm always amazed. You know, I go back to the when we had the tornado. That came through here.
Yeah.
You know, that was a moment in my career. It was one of those moments.
Turning points.
Yeah, that you realized that you were in a really good spot. The tragedy that happened and the devastation, our community stepped up to the plate, did what it needed to do, turned some horrible things into good things. You know, you can never erase the tragedy and loss that those families felt, but many of them went on to do wonderful things to make it better for other people down the road. That didn't happen by chance. That happened because that's the kind of people we are here.
Well, thank you for your confidence in our community. I just listening to you and your sincerity and your authenticity is important for us as a community and just doing what you do. Thank you for coming and always being willing to take the time.
I certainly enjoy being here. I always like hanging out with my friend Lisa there.
Yeah, well,
it's nice to see you today.
Thanks, Aaron.
And
wife she better watch out.
Okay,
I'll tell her.
But I, I close by just saying I sure do appreciate the opportunity to get to be the sheriff of the county.
Mm.
It's a great opportunity.
We're lucky to have you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And Radio Rehab, this has been a very exciting show. It'll be online. It'll be on the Internet, so you can tune in again at any time. Don't forget, between now and next week's show of Radio Rehab, don't forget to do the next right thing.